This is an MUT Radio podcast.
The time now is 11:29, which means we are getting into our guest. We've got a wonderful guest joining us, and his name is Neil Green. He is a comedian all the way in Ireland, but he's from here. I don't know why he went off. I don't know who said he can go off, but he's off there doing all the things. He's been in the comedy scene in South Africa for almost 2 decades now. He doesn't look it at all. He's had multiple Comedy Central appearances and has appeared on almost any stage that there has been in the whole country. His one-man show, Last Bus, released in 2020 and was mentioned in GQ magazine as one of the most notable comedy specials released that year. He became a much loved radio presenter on East Coast Radio, where he was nominated for a South African Radio Award. He's now based, like I said, in Dublin, Ireland, and is fast establishing himself as a fixture in the comedy scene in Ireland. So, Neil, hello.
Oh, hello. Thank you for the introduction there. I didn't even realize I did some of those things.
Yeah, 2 decades, you would think, you know, everything kind of blurs together. But yeah, that's cool. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me. Thank you to the listeners.
Yeah, so you I was saying I'm bringing all the colored people into Mlazi. So we I had to make sure, you know, the boy from you're from Newlands, yes?
From Marion Reed.
From Marion, my
don't,
bad.
Don't put me with the Newlands people. I'm from Newlands. I don't have any problems with Newlands people. But I'm from Marion Reed. I'm from Marion.
Marion Reed. Yeah. Okay, and how does a man from Marion Reed end up in Ireland? What are you doing there? Why? Come home.
What do you mean? It's nice. Yeah, listen, I needed to come to Europe to come see why the people from Europe felt like they had to leave a few hundred years ago. You know what I'm saying? I needed to see the situation on the ground here.
Oh, so it's actually for research purposes.
Strictly for research purposes. I wanted to know why did you all have to come all the way here to come interfere with us? You know what I'm saying?
But we love it. We love that you're representing, of course, and we know you're doing it well. So tell us about your journey into comedy. How did you, who told you were funny first, and then you were like, yeah, let me get paid to do this?
You know, I get so cross because, like, I meet people from school and they're like, I remember you from school. You weren't funny in school. Like, they get really upset about it. I don't know. Like, my journey was strange. I always liked comedy. Mm-hmm. I liked watching comedy. You know what I'm saying? But at that time in Durban, we didn't really have comedy shows going on when I started. It was sporadic. Like, every now and again, there'd be like some, like, important person will rotate through. But there was no comedy scene, you know? And I had no interest in doing comedy. I just loved comedy. And then I started writing. I was writing a blog. So I was writing for a website called Braino.com at that time. And one of the guys said, this stuff that you do here, you can do on stage. So I tried it and it went badly. Oh. Like, I did it one time and it was a disaster. And I was like, this is not for me. And I didn't do comedy again for like a year. Mm-hmm. And then I was brought in as part of a collective with, you know, some people like Richelieu, Bonnoir, Sfiso Nene, Carvin Goldstone. We just kind of gravitated towards one another and started the scene then. And I've been mixed up ever since.
And do you remember where your first show was?
Yes, it was at the Twisted Lemon at Varsity College, the one there in Westville. There's like a very strange... Yeah, I think it's Varsity College. Yeah, they had a little pub and we tried it out there. Those people were so confused. They didn't know what was going on. They just looked up and saw this very diverse group of people just doing something in the corner.
Oh,
we enjoyed ourselves, though.
Yeah. Oh, cool. And then so you, if you started off with writing your blogs and, you know, and then how is your, your method? How has it changed in the last 20 years?
Well, I've been blessed to like have had a lot of experience in that time. But the truth is, I'm very much a writing forward comedian. Mm. I'm not a person that does a lot of crowd work. I write. I sit at home, I prepare, and I write and I write and I overwrite. So when you see me on stage, I like to think I make it look like it's reactive and that it's, you know, a performance. But the truth is, it's scripted and rehearsed like you can't imagine. every time I go on stage. Like, I love that part of it, of that, that part of the creative process is me.
Yes.
You know? So.
And then, okay, so now there's a lot of stand-up comedians on TikTok and social media going viral for their crowd work. I don't know if you've seen any of it. So, and it's kind of become this whole, it's like trend, right? To almost like they're not even preparing their scripts anymore. They're just talking to people. But how, yeah, what is your approach to crowd work? How do you deal with hecklers or all those things? Yeah, what has been your experience with that?
Now, you see, I'll be honest with you, yeah, and this is where it gets tricky. Like, there's lots of, you know, those crowd work videos that you see on TikTok? Like, there's lots of skullduggery going on there. A lot of it is not what it appears to be.
Yes.
I'll be honest with you, a lot of it is scripted. It's as scripted as anything that I do. Mm. Myself as well. I definitely have places where it looks like I'm doing crowd work. But basically, I'll ask somebody a yes or no question. And if they say yes, I have something prepared. And if they say no, I have something prepared. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yes.
So I'm not saying I'm incapable of it, but yes, you're right. A lot of comedy has become that now. People expect that that's what comedy is. And there are people that are fantastic at doing that.
Mm.
Lots of people that have that gift, and it's great to watch. But yeah, it's just one part of comedy that seems to have become amplified to be people's idea of what comedy is now.
Yeah, which is insane because I haven't been to a live show in a long time, but I kind of miss the feeling that it is prepared. You know, I feel like it shows respect to the audience that, look, I've planned this thing.
I thought about it for weeks. I knew you guys were buying tickets. You were going to be here.
Yes.
I'm very sure that everything is right, you know, and that's exactly it. Like, you wouldn't go to a music concert. And when you get up, the guy's like, I haven't written any songs. I haven't thought of anything, but let's just vibe.
Yes. So, and now,
I'm not saying there's no place for it.
Yes. And that goes into also like your preparation. If you're touring, you know, you've been around South Africa and obviously every community is different and all those things. And now that you're in Ireland, how have you found, doing your research, how has your comedy changed, between South Africa and, the UK?
Oh, I'll tell you what, it's actually a lot of it translates, especially like the technical ability of, and as you said, like work ethic and the technical parts of writing jokes, that stays the same.
Mm.
It's just finding content. It's, you have to kind of be in the region to know the references and make sure that your audience gets your references. But I'll say this, it's strange, right? In the Republic of Ireland, when you do comedy here, the crowds are always mixed. When I say mixed, a lot of them are not from Ireland. So I find myself doing comedy to people from America as much as I'm doing comedy to people from Ireland, you know?
Yes.
We are staying in Dublin. It's a tourist city. Very, very touristy. I found that in South Africa as well. Cape Town. Cape Town is the same thing. In Durban, we can just throw out things that we all know and it's all familiar and it's easy and we have a good time. But when you go to Cape Town and you do Cape Town Comedy Club, then all of a sudden, the whole front row is from Switzerland now, you know?
Yes.
And you need to make sure that the material that you write and what you've prepared resonates with them.
Yes.
You know?
And now, so one of my, my qualms with comedy and comedians is that they, on one hand, they play into a lot of stereotypes. And on one hand, yeah, it's funny, but then, and then what? You know, like my general approach is that I think you can make a joke about anything as long as it's funny. It's got to be funny, right? You can't just make the sexist joke. You can't make the joke about the wife because it's the wife. It has to be funny, right? So how do you
100%.
How do you incorporate social commentary or, you know, political things? How do you incorporate that into... Because I was just saying before we brought you on that South Africans, that's how we deal with everything. We deal with humor. You know, like our president is called Cupcake.
Oh,
like,
yes.
You know? So, yes. So how do you bring all that into your sets?
I have a simple rule when me and it comes to comedy. I'll say anything, and I'll say the most controversial thing, as long as it actually happened or I actually feel that way.
Mm.
I will never say something for a reaction, and I'll never say anything to be incendiary or to be controversial. When you start down that path, I'm not saying you can't be successful. But I don't like that side of it.
Mm.
And if there's an audience, it's very important that anybody in that audience it's free to laugh along and know that we're all enjoying ourselves together. But I like what you said. Comedy, especially, it's still in its infancy. As a, like, it's been around for 60, 70 years as an organized art form, right? But it's very much in its infancy. And in South Africa and in Ireland, you can go to a show and still see people doing jokes about accents. Yes. And about, like, basic things about race. And, oh, you know, white people do this and black people do that. And we're still very much doing that.
Yes.
And the idea of doing jokes about my wife is irritating or my wife is nagging. Like, that's still very much content now. That's very much what people are still doing. And it shouldn't be relevant in today's time. And I'm happy to see how quickly comedy is catching up to that.
Yes.
Myself, I'm guilty of that. Oh, 100%. Like, as a Brano from Marin, we get into school in Brentwood, 100%. Like, you know, I'm going to get those off. But it's so empowering for me as I go along to hear people tell me, we don't like it when you do jokes about colored people stabbing each other, you know, and me going, I'm not going to do that anymore then.
Yeah, because, you know, I was like, we were talking, so Chimamanda Adichie has a thing with stereotypes aren't untrue, but they incomplete. What? Right?
It's exactly that.
Yes. And, you know, so stereotypes can be funny, you know, because it means that everyone can relate. Everyone's like, yes, I've seen that uncle. I've seen that auntie. I know that person. So it's funny. But.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. But there's so much
more. You have to respect your subject.
Yes.
You have to respect the subject in that the person themselves, you're not making them the joke.
Yes.
You know, you must still have reverence and respect,
And now speaking of not being progressive, I won't name names, but I went to a show, a comedy show, and one of the, I guess he was the host, was someone from East Coast Radio, right? And right, I was like, really? And it's like, he asked his father and his grandfather for all of their jokes, and he asked, and he was like, bring all of them. And he had, when I say he had everything, he had black and white, he had Indian, he had women, he had children, he had all the stereotypes, everything in one set. And I was like, just host the show and get off the stage. It was really irritating.
And that's the problem. That's the problem. When you were there and you looked around at the audience, like, you don't look around at them and they all, like, feeling the same horrified feeling that you're feeling. They're not all going, oh, what's this guy doing?
You know?
And that's the point.
So,
that's still acceptable now, and it shouldn't be.
Yeah. So,
it shouldn't be.
So speaking of, you know, I won't ask you how you feel about everyone at East Coast Radio, but what was your experience like? What was your experience at East Coast? Because for me at least, it was the first time I'd heard someone with your accent on East Coast Radio having their own show. And that's, it seems like a small thing, but we had this idea, you know, like with Tyler now. Oh, I was so irritated. There was some young colored boys were talking about, because I was like, oh my gosh, Tyler, the Grammys, whatever. And they were like, yeah, but why is she had to go and say, what the heck? She's so raw. She saw this. And I was like, you say that. And it's the idea that, like, our accents on, like, I have a very, you know, my parents send me off. They let me go get the international accent. But we have this. But I never thought that, like, the way my family sounded was unintelligent. But there's this idea that, like, colored people. Yeah. So anyway, so what was that like for you coming on the show? And yeah.
But you see, it's not just the colored experience, but I'll talk about it specifically as me, right?
Yes.
Because I went through it. My time there was brilliant, and I look back on it fondly, and I had the most amazing time, but it was peppered along the way. There was lots of instances and incidents along the way. And I'll be honest with you, you'll be amazed at how many of those problems came from other colored people.
Yes.
Never mind who I expected to have a problem with it. But other colored people were like, you on the radio and you're making us sound like this, and you're making us sound, because they expect that you get on the radio and you must start speaking a certain way.
You're going to pronounce your T's and H's.
On a platform. Get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Same with Tyler now. You're saying, once you're on a platform now, it's like, I must fall in with the queens. I'm not Shakespeare, boss. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not doing that. And so I'll say that for the whole time, overall, it was overwhelmingly positive. And I like to think I did a lot to further that conversation. But there was an actual specific moment, and it's still on the internet, and you can go back, where I had, I had to kind of stop the radio. On a Sunday afternoon, I brought in Chucky from CRO, and we had to have an honest conversation with the listeners of the station at that time and the general KZN audience, and tell them, just kind of lay it out for them that the way I speak is not a problem. Oh, but it was a problem.
Yeah.
You know, people were saying, you can't be on the radio saying what kind. You can't be on the radio saying, like, and I was like, but like other people can go on the radio and say, what's up, my China? And I don't know, red. I don't know the slang that you guys use. You know what I'm saying? Why, you know, why can they use their slang from where they come from? You know, it's not like I'm not going on the radio and being like the most colored person ever. I'm not going on the radio and saying, Bosh, we're my layer 6, 7, 8, who tamped the bell? Like, I'm not, like,
yeah, but you should be able to.
I should be able to, but I'm not doing that. But even the level of colored that I am was too colored for public consumption. But again, I'm happy that it wasn't a problem every day. And at the end of the day, I think I did enough to make that be less of a problem going forward.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of that.
And I'm proud that I can say no. There's my homie. He's on the radio. Don't talk to him. How would I say? But yeah, and you know, and also we're talking about how we're progressing, all these things. Tyler telling people that she's from the Gali and all these things. So we're moving up. Are there any, speaking of slang and all these things, are there any new phrases you've picked up that in Ireland that you think? Do you think are good ones that we should incorporate?
You know. Let me tell you, I was very disappointed because that was my plan. I was like, I'm gonna come there, I'm gonna find the slang. Because even like, let me tell you, I got this superpower that wherever I move in my life, whenever I move to a place, I somehow manage to find the place that's like the realest part. You said Gali. I always find the Gali wherever I move to. I gravitate towards it. So I got here. I thought, right, I'm going to come back with these talks. And you know what? You know how much slang that we use in South Africa, especially as colored people, that they use too? I was like, do you know what the word Shabin is, an Irish word?
No, I didn't know it was an Irish word.
It's an actual Irish word. Shabin is an Irish word that means an illegal drinking place. I was like, oh, guys, I thought this was our thing. Till I came here and found out it was already always a thing. Hundreds of years,
So really, actually, we are all the same, like you said, around the world. We would not know your experiences or unique.
I don't want to say all the same. I just want to say that a certain cohort, a certain group of people came over and brought their language and their ideas and everything to us. And we just didn't realize we're starting from scratch. But yes, the Catholic Church has done their work. Let's just say that.
You were talking briefly about your experience. You were working with Carvin Goldstone and a bunch of other people. But who in the beginning, who were some of, you were saying that obviously like there weren't many colored faces, even just the African faces in the comedy scene for you to look to. But who have you over the years drawn inspiration from?
Well, you see, it's not even that a specific demographic group wasn't represented. In Durban, we just had nothing. There was no comedy. None. You know? And in the beginning, there was like, now and again, there'd be like, happen at the Pet Center, and then there'd be some good comedians there. Or gigs happening at City Hall, and there's some nice comedians there. But there wasn't a comedy scene. You know? Like, there wasn't like regular gigs that you could go to. So over the years, watching people, like myself, I managed to build a small something for myself, but it was so amazing, like starting out in the beginning. As I said, my very first show I ever did, I was with Sviso Nene there, and it was his first show, you know, and we were like, what's happening? And then he went on to do everything that he's done, you know, and I was there with Senzo Mthethwa at that time, and then to watch him go on and like be part of Dingalings and like what they did with what they did was their own thing. And then we went off. You know, and Carvin and Richelieu. And again, Richelieu was his first show. And to watch what Laughingstock became and all that kind of, and Robbie Collins. And, you know, like I have all these stories of like going to do comedy for the first time in Ladysmith with Celeste and Thule. And, you know, like we just knew, like just looking at one another, like kind of figure things out. And then you see these people now and you're like, oh, you know, when you meet up with them, we'll always have that runs through it. So,
yes.
the people that I look up to and the people that were, that continue to be my inspiration are literally the people that were around me at the time, you know?
Mm.
And it's good to see people going on to hit heights that I haven't hit, because it makes me realize that I can also come with you. Mm. We can also get there, you know? And then there's people that started 10 years after me,
yes,
that have absolutely flown. But for, as I said, for me, the most inspirational thing was seeing South Africa from the time Trevor Noah did Daywalker.
Mm.
Like, you know, from that special to see comedy go super mainstream to where it is now. It's amazing.
Yes.
It's really amazing.
You know, I don't ever want to hear anyone say that comedians are just, they're just funny. They don't know. You know, you are always so wholesome. You are so lovely to speak to. You just, you always have like such positive things to say about people that you work with, and you just, you're lovely.
Ah, thank you.
I'm not gonna let you go just yet. But but yeah, so we're speaking about the future and, you know, going where comedy is going. So what do you have, any words of wisdom for young aspiring, not comedians, stand-up comedy comics, but also maybe just going into the entertainment space, radio, all these things?
I tell you what, I've been really blessed in my journey to meet so many people from all kinds of different artistic backgrounds.
Mm.
And I think a lot of what makes you ultimately successful within the arts is the same. I think comedy, radio, when you're going to be a jazz musician, whatever, it's the same thread that runs through everything. It's one story with little offshoots going in either way.
Mm.
And to anybody that's sitting now and making art, you know, I think some of the most, like, I don't want to be, you just said I'm a positive person and I don't want to be a negative person, but I think a lot of people, we get told that you have to follow your dreams, and to follow your dreams, that means you must just give up everything, take the leap, they say.
Yes.
If you don't do it, and it's like, that's the one thing that I want to leave with people that I learned in my journey that might apply to somebody else's journey. It's very important to have a base.
Yes.
Like to have, like, we live in a time where finances are important, and it's easier to achieve whatever you want to achieve if you have a solid financial base. I don't mean wealth. I don't mean rich. I don't mean, there's no set standard, but I'm saying if the basic parts of your subsistence are taken care of, it's easier to create art. I'm saying the starving artist, like, I don't know, that's an ideal from the 70s and the 80s.
Mm.
This idea of throwing yourself into something. You can do two things. Like, you can take time,
yes,
and do one thing that's supporting you and getting you through the days.
Mm.
And it, I'm telling you, it creates almost a different kind of freedom,
yes,
to throw yourself into your art. If you have 4 hours a day or 3 hours a day to completely immerse yourself in your art, that's enough. You know,
yes,
if you're doing something earlier on in the day to support yourself, and then you're taking a few hours every day and throwing yourself into it, you'll be as successful as a guy that wakes up in the morning and takes his MacBook down to a coffee shop and sits and does art for the whole day. I don't know. You know, like,
yes,
that's the picture we have.
Yes.
That's not a real picture.
And, like, and you know,
I don't know where that comes from.
And you know, and those words are the hardest to give to the artist and to the current starving artist, right? Because they don't want to hear it. They want to hear, yeah, that their ideas, and they're going to make, you know. I have a friend who is also a creative, and she's, you know, in this
yeah,
space. And she was telling me her goals, her dreams, and I was like, I love this. Yes, yes, yes. And I said, that's so cool. I love your dreams. How are we making money for the next 3 months? I was like, that's great. You will achieve all your things, but how are we eating?
Yeah, bro. Like, listen, if you're living in your parents' pool house in Durban North, don't listen to me. Do whatever you want, kid. Go crazy. Like,
yes,
if you're from the G side, West side, like, if you're from where I'm from, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You still have to do basic things.
Mm.
So just doing, and watch, when I say do basic things, I don't mean you have to get like a regular job. There's things that you can do, maybe even within your art, to be a money generator.
Yes.
And then make everything be pure. I met a lot of comedians like that in my journey. People are like, oh, I'm never going to do corporate work. I'm never going to sell out. My message is this. I'm like, bro, just do this thing. Get this 10 grand. Don't swear, whatever they tell you. You know, I've been to gigs where they give you a list of things. I did, I give you a list. They say, you're not allowed to talk about load shedding. You're not allowed to talk about this because this company, that, you know, get what I'm saying? It's like, I'll do whatever you want me to do today so that I can get this money today. And then tomorrow I'm back on stage doing my own thing. So I'm being, you know, so that's the message. I'm not saying you have to go work in an office necessarily, but find other ways to generate revenue outside the purity of your art.
Yes,
those two things can live together.
So, yeah, so speaking of being told what you can and can't say, have you ever got into trouble about some of your things with your family?
with my family, yeah, of course, 100%. But like with them, it's like I can shrug it off and I can go, oh, guys, what are we doing? Like,
oh, you
know that this is me, and I didn't mean it like that, you know. But like, I've gotten into trouble with audience members. I've had to cover myself with a jacket in the back of a car and be sped out of Hillcrest because I said something to make the audience turn on me. Yeah,
oh,
yeah, like
no.
That happens.
That's okay, you can fight, it's fine.
Yeah, I can fight and I can run, and I alternate between the two. I don't need to do one or the other, you know.
Actually, before you go into stand-up comedy, do some self-defense classes so you can
know
manage.
What I'm saying? Yeah, self-defense classes, and I mean, carry a shambok.
Yes.
There's no shame in carrying a shambok, you know?
Actually, shambok sounds like it could also be an Irish word.
Yeah, it probably is. The sham part, yeah.
Oh, my word. So we're going to wrap it up, but I want to know, what can we see, expect from you in the future? Where can we find you? What can we see?
I'm not a super online person. Every now and again, I like to make a video. I like making videos, but I'm not super online. Mm-hmm. And I tell you what, the thing I'm most wanting to do, I need to touch down in my city. I need to come home. I need to be in Durban for a while, and I need to do many shows.
Yes.
Many shows. So if you follow me online, that's cool, but you basically just be watching me there to see when I'm around, because I'm hoping to be around soon. I have lots of stories. I have lots to share. Yeah.
Oh, and we're looking forward to it. And what are there, because we've got listeners from all over, so maybe there's someone in Ireland, or do you have any shows coming up in your area?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes, I'm always grinding in Ireland. Wherever I am, wherever you put me, I'm going to find a stage there and work. So, again, if you follow me online in Ireland, like I'm literally doing a show next week, end of the month, I'm going on tour. Two very big South African acts are joining me at the end of this year, and we'll be going on tour in Ireland.
Yes.
So, eye out for that as well.
Love it. So, maybe we'll come. We'll do an OB from Dublin. We'll come to one of your shows.
I mean, why not? Yeah, why not?
Right. So, Neil Green
is. Let's do an outside broadcast. Let's go.
Yes. So, Neil Green is Neil, N E I L G R E E N, comedian on Instagram. And you can find him on TikTok as well. If you want to keep tabs until he touches down in your city, wherever you are in the world. Thank you so much for joining us. You have been
a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you can come again anytime.
All right, sure. Okay. I'll hold you to that.
Thanks.
Thanks so much, people.
Bye.
This is an MUT Radio podcast.